Hello, everyone. It's April 12th, 2017, and this is your episode 93 of At Percussion. I'm your host, Casey Cangelosi. With me, as always, are my hosts, Laurel Black.
Hi.
And Megan Arnes.
Hello.
Ben Charles, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you, Casey?
Fine, thanks. We had Gordon Stout on campus today.
Ooh. We did.
I saw him last week.
Really?
Right. Yeah, because you were there, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Gordon's so great.
It's a small world.
Did he just do a class? Did he play a recital? What did he do?
He did a class.
Nice.
Yeah, he was passing through, so we piggybacked a little master class off of our friend in Radford.
Cool.
Yeah, so thanks, Rob Sandrell, for doing that. That's awesome. Well, you guys, our guest today is a drummer and dance virtuoso. He is known for his energy, athleticism, and precision on stage. He comes from a lineage of drummers and dancers, and today he's one of the leading Ghanaian dancers of his generation. He's with us today from Cal Arts in Valencia, California, where he teaches, and he's right there in person. So you guys, this person who looks like a... He looks like a movie star, but he's actually a drummer. So he's like hands down the most handsome drummer I've ever seen.
How's that for an introduction?
I guess he's a dancer, so it makes sense he's this handsome. But anyway, you guys, this is Nani Agbeli. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the great introduction.
So would the term man crush apply here, Casey? I feel like maybe it wouldn't.
I mean, possibly. I don't know. I always thought Ben was the best looking drummer in the...
People often confuse Nani and me, so we get that all the time.
Yep, no doubt. Hey, well, why don't you give us a little rundown of what you're doing there in Mizzou with Megan?
So I'm down here to kind of help establish and also advertise, the Ghanaian part of the world music courses that Megan is teaching here or introducing here, just to bring more awareness to the program and get more people to know about it and sign up for it and be involved and share it more to other people. Yeah,
wonderful. So does that consist of a concert or maybe a
circle
dance class?
I've been here. So I've been here since Monday. I've been here since Monday and I've been going to classes. I've been going to rehearsals, workshops, and just trying to work with the community, the students, and, you know, as much as I can get myself out there at the school. And we have the concert on Friday. Her group of students, we've been on top of rehearsals and trying to get a lot of things done before Friday. So, yeah, it's been classes, workshops, and rehearsals towards the performance of Friday.
Yeah, wonderful.
And this project has kind of been... personal goal of mine for a while because I studied in Ghana 10 years ago for 3 weeks, took a trip there and was at the center that Nani's family runs. And I'd always somehow wanted to share that with some aspects of that with my students and eventually hopefully take them to Ghana with me. So the first step I kind of identified was getting back into learning some more of the music and the dancing and bringing someone in. So I met Nani in Chicago a couple of years ago and I saw him teach and I was like, that's the person. That's who I need to bring to my school. And so I started working on it then, finding funding and kind of developing this project. Mm-hmm. But I went out to CalArts to study with him over the Christmas break and have been teaching material to my students all semester, kind of in preparation for his visit and for this concert. So yeah, this is the poster. It's become a joke now because one of the sources we got funding from was a student organization that requires you to use a percentage of your funding for advertising. And I feel like you can do so much on the internet for free now that I was like, okay, I'll just make $250 worth of posters. So I have like thousands of postcards, and like everywhere we go, I'm like shoving it in people's face and inviting zone concerts every hour. So
it still makes sense to make posters. People still see posters.
I agree.
Yeah. Ben, what do you got there?
Yeah. So I had a question. I was in, I can't remember where, Illinois over this past weekend, and I did a little duo recital with my duo partner at Olivet Nazarene University. And one of the faculty members there, his name is Andy Miller. Andy's a friend of mine from grad school. And Andy has studied extensively Malinke drumming, which is West African. And I actually had invited Andy to be a guest co-host tonight, but he couldn't make it. But when I told him who our guest was, he said, oh, he does Awe drumming. I don't really know anything about that. And I knew, like, they're both West African drumming styles. So could you tell us in particular about Awe drumming? What makes it different from other West African drumming styles?
Well, it's not even just Awe drumming. It's like Ghanaian drumming.
Yeah.
Because you know, in Ghana, every region has, you know, its own traditional music and dance and culture and all that stuff. So if you want to talk about it, you want to compare the whole cultural and drumming in the country to this other country. But the thing is, in terms of specific, since we're talking about Awe drumming, even when you go to a different region, like my region is Volta region. When you go to Ashanti region, the music they play there is 100% different from what we play at the Volta region. If you travel up north and you go to the northern region, what they play there is totally different. So, and that's one cool thing, I think, about Africa in general, not just, you know, part of Africa, is that depending on where you go, like our music from one country to the next is totally 100% like totally different. And there is a lot of, you know, there is a lot of cool things about that. There might be some similarities depending on the neighboring border country, but a lot of it is totally different. And, you know, you will have no idea about it. Like when I go to when I go to Nigeria, I really will not have any idea. Probably 90% will not have any idea about their music, and I have to learn it, or you know, I can teach it. I have to bring someone in to teach it. But Nigeria is a neighboring country to Ghana, so yeah.
So with all these different music styles, is there influence between them?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Especially like in Ghana, even though, you know, each region has totally a different thing going on, the country is promoting a lot on working together, each region's working together and learning each other's culture and music. And so what the country has, the government has started like way, way back, is for every single school from kindergarten to university level must have a cultural thing going on at the school. And what they do, what we do at the end of every year is we put on a competition in the area. So we do area competition, then it becomes a district competition, then it becomes a regional competition. And when you go to the regional level, what the governments require from you is playing at least 3 different music or pieces from different region. Is required as part of your competition. And if you cannot, or if you don't play it perfectly to what it's supposed to be from that region, you don't get to be part of the prize winners and stuff like that. So, you know, it's been pushed a lot, and a lot of people are taking advantage of that. So, like, I am from the Volta region, but I can do any major main pieces from any of the regions in Ghana. And that's because of, you know, part of it is because of this promotion and this thing that the government is trying to push.
Mm. Cool.
That's interesting. How long has that been going on?
At least since the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, since the 70s. Because I know growing up, in elementary school, that was already happening because I was part of a group in elementary school, and you know that was part of it mm-hmm. when I was growing up. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And then I have a sort of landmine of a question here, because this could probably take up the rest of the podcast. but when I heard Andy talk, he actually talked kind of extensively about the history of all this, and he had some really interesting insight of there was European colonization, and then you know the folk music came back out of that. And I know Megan had said you guys were talking about preserving cultural identity. So yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about the history of Ewe drumming?
Well, the history of Ewe drumming it doesn't have, like, I cannot give you a straight answer. That's the thing. Because the history doesn't come from one place. It comes from different places. And the reason is because Ewes are not originally from Ghana. They migrated. They migrated from Benin, Moche, and then traveled down Nigeria, Togo, and then came to Ghana. And so, you know, when they brought some history and cultural stuff from Benin and then came to meet some in Ghana. So, you know, it depends on the piece you're talking about. The history can be from Ghana and related to the colonization and the British and stuff like that. And depending on the piece, it can come from Benin and stuff like that. So, for example, if you're talking about a piece like Achi Agbeko, you know, part of the story, part of the history is that it's a piece that was designed and created to commemorate the fight and the war that our ancestors went through to maintain and take possession of the property that we, the new generation, now holds. So some of the songs, which actually I'm doing with Allison, there's one song that, you know, that talks about fighting between the white people and the black people, the Ghanaians, you know. And so like story like that, like a piece like that. Then there is a relationship like that, which has a history from colonization and the British. And then when you talk about a piece like Ajogbo is totally brought down from Benin to Ghana. And so like a piece like that has nothing to do with colonization or, you know, British or anything like that. So, you know, depending on what the focus is and what we're talking about, it changes, at least for the Voltairians, it does. Yeah.
Awesome.
But they did actually, I want to add this, but they did bring a lot, like guitar. The beginning of guitar in Ghana was brought by the British, you know. They were certain instrument that they brought either to trade with some of our instrument or to trade for other things in the country. But that was how high life kind of started. You know, when high life started, it started with a guitar. You know, it was just someone sitting down playing guitar and singing songs about people and gossiping and stuff like that. Then as time went on, it started building up, and then, you know, it changed into adding drum set and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So they did bring something and left something musically with us, and which we're still like using. Yeah.
Yeah, wow, wonderful. Ben, you said you were at all of the Nazarene, is that right?
Yeah, I think you were there a few years ago.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Did you see Matt Jacklin?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, good, good, good. Him and Andy were a blast. You know, Nadi, I wonder if you could you could tell us a little bit about the center your family runs in Volta.
Awesome. I don't remember which year, but when my dad started his career, my dad was an actor, a drummer, dancer, singer. So he was part of, you know, part of his job for a while was the chair of the folklore music in Ghana. So we, the family, traveled a lot. I mean, moved a lot from region to region, which was cool, but also hard on the family, depending on, you know, how you think about it. what he did at a point was he was performing, and there was this student from the US was watching him perform and was moved by his performance. And so then, you know, helped him to gain access to working in the US. So he started like traveling to the US to work over here and things like that. And then students started following him from the US to Ghana to study with him. And then he was going from like one person to like three people to like five, and then he was getting more and more. So then he had then, you know, and he didn't have a place to kind of teach the people. So then he decided to like build a place so that, you know, those students, when they come, they can have a place to stay and all that stuff. So in 1990, he completed the center, which is Dagbe Cultural Institute and Arts Center up in the Volta region, you know, at a town called Aflawu, close to the border of Togo. So he built that place and started like hosting students. So students will come there. It is an all-inclusive facility. So you come there, you stay there, you sleep there, you eat there. So breakfast, lunch, dinner there. You take 4 hours classes there, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon. You have access to the beach. The beach is probably like 15, 20 minutes away. And then, you know, you go to the traditional markets and you get to learn between all the cultural things that goes on in the country. You get to choose from any of them that you want to specialize in and, you know, study that. Student comes from anywhere from 2 weeks or like a year. There was a couple of times we had students who came there for a year, 2 months, and studying the music every day for the 4 hours a day for the whole time. So, you know, yeah, so that is, and mostly we get like groups from universities. So we get groups from Tufts University. We get groups from Berklee College of Music, Bowling Green University. And, you know, we have high school groups that also come there. And then we have, you know, travelers who just passes by and then just want us to perform for them or just to give them a little, you know, tour and a little taste of what goes on there and stuff like that. So, yeah, it is, you know, it is a really beautiful place that still holds strongly the tradition of the country and specific things that's supposed to be going on in the country out at the center. Yeah.
Wow, wonderful. I have a question for Megan.
Yes.
So, Megan, I would love to know, because you're our world expert here. And
expert?
Well, I mean, amongst, you know, between
closer than
Ben
the rest
and
of
I.
us, for sure.
Between Ben, Laurel, and I. You know, I think we're all in agreement here that we want these things to be taught and we think these things are wonderful. And I wonder, I'd love to hear in your own words, you know, why you think this is really valuable and what you think it brings and, you know, just your feelings about it.
Sure. Well, there are two parts to that, my answer, I think. And one is involves culture and the other involves music. So I think a student going through a 4-year curriculum in percussion that is only studying one tradition in percussion and they're being, well, okay, wait, sorry, I'm not studying with, did I say I'm starting with music or did I say culture? I'm switching to music. So a student that's studying in a four-year undergraduate institution, I think, you know, okay, if you are on a straight path to being in an orchestra, then that's great. You know, do that. If you're on a straight path going somewhere, that's great. But I think we know the challenges of the current job market in these different areas of percussion. And I think percussionists who are more well-rounded and exposed to a lot of different styles of music, I don't want to say are more likely to have a job, but are marketable because we're not doing one thing. You know, you have experience with different kinds of music. And
if I could add to that, That was actually a direct factor in me getting this job, that I did have world music experience, especially steel band, which I'm by no means an expert in, but they wanted someone that could teach their steel band, and I had a little bit of experience. So yes, that is very true.
Yeah, so for collegiate instructors, for elementary school teachers who can introduce students to not just one type of music, you know, for middle school teachers, high school teachers, for people who are going to be teaching at community centers, whatever, I think it's helpful to not just be good at one thing, but to have several tricks in your bag, whether that's, you know, different styles of music on one instrument or different areas or whatever. So I think it helps in the job market. I think as a musician, one of the main reasons that I incorporate it in my curriculum is because learning by ear is such a different experience. And that experience that I had, I'm pretty safe to say I wasn't exposed to any African music until I went to Ghana. Directly exposed, you know, like studying it. I remember like sitting in, because my teacher, Michael Bump at Truman, I said, I'm going to Ghana. He's like, do you know anything about music in Ghana? I don't know anything, you know? I was like, I want to do this. And so we were like printing off articles and he was like teaching me a timeline. Wow. And yeah, I knew nothing, you know? And then I went and like, I had such a hard time the first few days because I don't think I'd ever learned anything by ear before. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a five and drum corps and some things were taught by ear a little bit, but I was like, I have to write this down. How am I going to remember this? Mm. I can't process this. I was like freaking out, you know, it was such a different experience. And when I returned, that kind of stuck with me. And, you know, I tried to keep learning different things by ear through studying different traditions and things like that. But by incorporating into my curriculum here, I feel like the students are becoming better musicians by using their ears. You know, they're able to pick up things faster. They're able to remember things better, you know? And so I've definitely seen a pretty direct outcome just by teaching things that are taught by ear, not just read through the page. Sorry, I could talk about this for an hour because I really believe in it. But from the music side or from the culture side, I think people who, okay, maybe I shouldn't say this, but people should travel. People should like experience other parts of the world. People should meet people who aren't the same color as them. You know, people should experience. And when I say should, I feel pretty strongly about Americans should learn what it feels like to be in the minority. What does that feel like? You know? And so I think by introducing a different style of music or a different culture and turning people onto that, you never know what you're doing by introducing someone to something. So maybe down the road, someone will go to Ghana or they will remember this experience and they will have meet a Ghanaian friend or join an African culture club or go to a black church, you know, or something and have that experience. That's not just what they grew up with. And I think that's even more important in the middle of the country here, where we are less diverse, for sure. And so I feel pretty great responsibility to kind of introduce my students to things outside of their current worldview.
I want to add a little before, we move on. I think we all agree that, you know, as a performer, expression is one of the biggest thing. I mean, if it's not the thing, it's, you know, one of the biggest part of who we should be or what we should be doing on stage. Because the more you can express yourself as a performer on stage in the classroom, the more freer your audience or your students will be around you. And that is what the Ghanaian music or the African music brings to the table. It helps you because you're not looking on anything. You're not concentrating on anything apart from concentrating on the audience because you learned everything by ear and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So all the energy that you have to put in reading whilst you're playing or anything like that goes then into expressing yourself to the audience or to your student or to your teacher, whatever it is. And so, you know, that's one strong part of Ghanaian music. You learn by ear, and when you master it, all you do is play it because it's in the body, it's ingrained in the system. So then all you're doing is playing, then you have all this room and this rest of your being to express yourself, and you get into the audience that way, you impress the audience that way, you drag the audience to what you're doing that way, and they get connected.
That's yeah, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, also just if we're talking directly, the music that we're working on this week, you know, I mean, there are so many, the music is so complicated. It's so, and I mean, we are barely scratching the surface. And I think that's really good for the students and myself to see that, you know, this is not something that you can take and write down on a piece of paper and perform it. It takes years and years, and it belongs to someone, and it's not meant to be written down. It belongs to a group of people. And if you want to learn it, you need to talk to the people who own that music, right? And you need to bring them to your school, and you shouldn't write it down on a piece of paper in a book and sell it.
Right.
You shouldn't do that. And so I think that that's a very direct experience of, like, you know, African music in the classroom. That's quotes if we're on video or not. But, you know, I think that will be a lesson to all of them that this is a very deep tradition, a very treasured tradition. And it is in danger. It could be in danger of going extinct if we take it and we write it down and we sell it and we kill it instead of, you know, bringing in people who own the music and who live the music and are a part of the culture and support them.
Nani, would you mind transcribing and writing all this stuff down for me so I can put it in a book and sell it?
Actually,
it will cost you a lot. I don't think you can pay for it.
It's life.
Well, we should talk. Ben and I could pool some money together.
It's so, not going to cost you money, buddy.
Do people like ask you that? Like, hey, can I help you write a book? And can you
publish Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of people requested for me to work with them to write a book, you know, and make a DVD and all those things. So it's like a combo thing. And markets. I've had a lot of people, you know, ask me to do that. I mean, you know, as much as I try to, or we try to bring this culture and music awareness to people, there will still be some out there that are very ignorant about, you know, about the whole thing. And, you know, that's fine. That's who we are as people. That's fine. So we just try to educate them. At least I try to educate them as much as possible. So when people like approach me with stuff like that, of course, I'm a human being. My first reaction is, you know, to get really offensive and offended and stuff like that. But then I have to be like, you know what? They're not from Ghana. They really don't understand what this culture is about. So, you know, use this opportunity and you know, talk to them and educate them about it. And I do. And so then it end up by me saying, no, can do. You know,
yeah.
So we've had, like, back when I was in Ghana, we've had people come in or groups come in, and all they want to do is videotape us, you know, play and perform, and they videotape us and they go away. You say, oh, sit down, let me teach you. They are like, no, just play the stuff. I just want to video record it. And we're like, okay, sure. And then we'll set up, and all we do is play improvisations. We don't play the real thing. We just improvise for every single instrument, and they take it back and they cannot use it.
And then you steal their video cameras and you smash them and destroy.
So we also have come up with how to, you know, go around it if we don't want you to take it away and you're pushing for it for us to do it, you know. So hopefully, you know, people will start understanding that and start getting more involved than using technology to kind of like get it away.
So, Megan, I love that you said people should travel, people should go to these places. I think like should doesn't, it's correct, but it doesn't even quite hold enough weight, you know, because you're so right. You know, it's an important thing to be doing. It's not like, oh, you should because you'll enjoy it or you'll know more about the world. It's like, yeah, that's like the simplest benefit of it. I mean, there's so much more to, you know, I mean, what it does for you.
Absolutely.
Sorry, Ben, what were you saying? Yep.
So in a twist of irony, after Megan went on this big long rant about not writing books, some hack job named Steve Schick did write a book. And I wanted to read a quote from Mr. Schick out of his book. And it's kind of a long one, so bear with me here, but it's about West African drumming. This is Steve Schick talking. He says, Steve Reich visited Ghana on a study trip of the music of West Africa and the year before he composed drumming. As a result, he has repeatedly been asked about the role of African and other non-Western sources on his subsequent music. He answered these questions eloquently in his writing about music, sections of which were reprinted as the notes for his recording of drumming. Here he stated that for him, the study of African music was confirmation. I can think of no more illuminating comment than this for a percussionist who seeks to disentangle issues of globalism and cultural homogeneity that surrounded current practices in contemporary percussion music. Yes, the use of drums and tightly cycling periodic patterns in drumming is a quality found in African music, just as the heavily nested contrapuntal structures where several simple parts combine to create a complex whole is a characteristic of Indonesian gamelan. But the former is also part of every jazz drummer's vocabulary thanks to African American music, and the latter is a technique well known to anyone who loves the music of Bach. Drumming does not appropriate ideas from other cultures, it confirms them and resonates with them. And I could go on reading Mr. Schick's book, but that's the long and short of it. So,
wow, cool.
Yeah. As soon as Megan started talking, I just thought of that.
Nice.
Very nice. Nani, I'd love to hear a little bit about what it's like teaching at Cal Arts. I've always heard such wonderful things about Cal Arts and excuse me, and just what a really cool place and a unique place that it is.
Yeah, I mean, when I moved to the U.S., after like 2-3 years, I kind of designed this thing in my head where I'm like, that would be the perfect place to be, you know, to do my work. That would be perfect. And what I painted in my head was an institution or a place where all the arts are in one building, are in one place. Because, you know, apart from my music, dance, I also do graphic designing, I do textile designing, I do web designing. And so, you know, like, I'm like, it would be perfect if I can work at a place that has all these things together. But after a couple of years, you know, that never came to me. And so I'm like, yeah, this is just, you know, something I'm thinking about that doesn't exist. Until 2013, when I got an email from my assistant boss from Tufts University. And then I went to their website to look at more things and read more stuff. And I'm like, it does exist, you know, and it made me so, so happy and so excited. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to push for this. I'm going to do everything possible to get this position. So, and when I went to visit the school, when I got, you know, I got picked as the last four for an interview, when I came back home, I just was like, okay, this is it. This is where I need to be. Like, this is my place. So then, you know, so then I did everything I could. And fortunately, you know, I got the job and I got the position and I'm there now. But it is an amazing, 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 like I can say, I can repeat amazing enough place to be at, you know, as a student, as a teacher, as an educator, as someone coming from a different country and trying to share their culture and educate people with their culture. It's just an amazing place to be at on so many different levels. And one of them is because, you know, there's a lot of interracial stuff going on there. There are people from China, from India, from everywhere, like everywhere you can think about. And there's a lot of, you know, exchange programs going on, and each of the instructors are the best at what they do. So, you know, it's like students are getting like the highest people that can represent their country or represent what the music is over there. And the students are really, really great. Like they come in already with a great background. And so then it makes you, the instructor, have a lot of room to work with and a lot of things already set up for you to work with. And for me, it's just like, there is no end to it, because that's one of the things when I was teaching, I'm like, okay, I need to expand. Like, what I have to share is more than what you're giving me, is more than the room you're giving me to share. And they're not allowing me to go any further. And I'm like, but I can do way more than that. Like, what I'm doing right now is like just a little. And they couldn't. But at CalArts, it's just like, well, what else can you do? Well, I can do this. Okay, you do it. Okay, now what else can you do? It's like every time you finish a project, there is more room for you to expand and bring something else. So, you know, which is great, which is what I wanted. You know, I want that challenge to always be able to challenge myself, then come back and challenge my student and have it keep going in that circle. So, you know, there's amazing thing going on at CalArts. The students are amazing. The faculties over there, each of them are really, really professional and great in what they do. And when we come together to perform as a team, it's just firework. It's a blast. So yeah, I'm very fortunate to be associated and be working at CalArt. And of course, all that you heard, I can put a stamp on it. It is true. Yeah, because I'm experiencing it myself. So yeah.
Well, you know, one question I have, what aspect would you say is the most challenging to get across to people who are not familiar with this drumming and dancing?
It's having them understand the cultural aspect and why they should do it. Because Ghanaian music is not just about, I was just actually explaining this in a class yesterday. Ghanaian music is not just about playing the music or doing the dance or singing the song. Ghanaian, every single piece that is a traditional piece from Ghana has a story and a history to it. And that is what we, the Ghanaians, stand for. And that's what we're trying to promote, is how to bring that story and bring that cultural aspect out to the audience. And that is when all the rhythm and the polyrhythm and all the movement and all the voice stuff comes in. Like I was teaching in my song class, when I teach one song, I make sure I explain almost word to word to the student, because it's not just singing the song, it's how you sing the song. It's the emotion and the effect that goes into the song is what makes the song the type of song it is or it represents. So like that is what is difficult to kind of get people who are not into this style of music to come in to join in, you know. So what I've adapted like a couple of years ago, which CalArts again is the best place to do it, and I'm doing it now, is I'm taking the traditional songs and I'm rewriting them and I'm playing them on Western instruments, you know. So which is working so far, because people who are not connected or don't want or don't understand what the traditional stuff is about, they are now beginning to connect because they like the Western instrument, because they that's what they know. And now they're hearing something else being played on the Western instrument, which they are not used to, because, you know, they're used to the Western instrument, but now used to the tradition. And now it's kind of like they're hearing those two together and they're having fun and they are enjoying it. And I was saying yesterday in the class that, you know, I've had a couple of students who were hesitant to take my traditional classes because of this, because I offer that as a course at CalArts. Is, you know, it's a high life style of music, and through that, you know, I've had students who started taking my traditional stuff. So, you know, yeah.
That's so cool. Can you tell us about your teaching responsibilities at CalArts and the African program?
So, I mean, my position over there is the head of the African program, and the African program is designed to offer students MFA. So students come there and graduate in, you know, MFA in African music and dance. And it's a 2 years program. And there was about four and a half courses or classes before I came in. And since I came in, I've expanded it probably to like 8 or so. So right now we have 2 music ensemble, one beginning, one advanced. And the beginning, we do all the 3 aspects of the tradition. So we drum, we sing, we dance. Just to give students, since it's a beginning class, to give them a general taste of what Ghanaian music is about, so that by the end of the semester or the year, then they have a better idea if they want to continue what they should take next. So then we do that. And then the advance is being at the top level, playing very complex and complicated stuff and things like that. But in the advance, all we do is drumming, nothing else. And then we have 2 dance classes, 1 beginning, 1 advanced. And then we have a singing class. And then we have a history class, ethnology of African music. And then we have another class that specifically concentrates on the northern side of Ghana. And then we have a polyrhythm class. And on top of that, of course, we have private lesson and independent studies and all that stuff that goes on behind the main scene. So, yeah, that's what I do. And my responsibility is to see to the designing of the program, when classes to be offered, and, organizing, buying, putting costume and instruments together. Making sure we have enough, teachers to be in the class and teaching this stuff. And it's like the general organization of the whole curriculum and the course. So, yeah, that's my position and that's what I do at CalArts. And I'm beginning to kind of offer another course in textile designing at the school. So that will be cool. And it's in the process right now. So it will be cool if that when that goes through. Because then students can, can take that course, design their own fabric, and then make their own costume out of those fabric, then use it for the traditional stuff. So, I'm looking forward to a great future out at CalArts. Yeah.
Every time I hear you explain that, I'm like, I want to take a sabbatical and go get an MFA.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun because the place is open, and that's another cool thing about CalArts. Like the whole school is open 24/7. Like you go there 2 a.m. and you see students practicing. You go there like 3:30, 4 a.m. Someone is playing something over there, practicing or something. Like the place is just, which is great, which is awesome. And it makes the students get to the level that we want them to get to. So when you see our performance, when you see us perform, you will know that, yeah, there is no question that these people are from CalArts.
One of my favorite things is just a noisy practice hallway.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's the thing. My office. Happy. My office is right by my classroom, my main classroom, and that is where students come to practice because that is where all the instruments are. You have no idea how many times I say in my head, can you guys just stop practicing for? And sometimes I say it to them, like I'm walking to my office thinking I'm going to do a recording and so I need a quiet environment, or I'm going to do an online lesson so I need a quiet environment, and then I approach and I can already hear someone like playing so loud and stuff like that, and I walk by and I look in and I'm like, do you guys take breaks? You know you can take breaks, right? You don't have to be playing all the time, right? And then they look at me and they're like, yeah, but if we come to class not prepared, we know you're going to start yelling at us. So no can do. We have to keep playing, So yeah. The noisy, hallway is one of the thing. Yeah.
For me, it's even worse because like I'll come up here and it's like, there's no instrument for me to practice on.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cause they're using it all, right? Yeah.
Hey, well, Laurel has a question. Her internet is being a little wishy-washy right now, but she would like to know if you design your own textiles for performance.
Yes, Short answer, yes. So one thing I do, which I believe in, is when you have something as your main thing, you need to look around that main thing and figure out if there are other things that comes with that thing. And if there is, it would be a great idea for you to go and learn or know about those things. So for me, drumming, dancing, singing, that is the performance aspect. But does costume come with that? Yes. Where are the costumes from? Textiles. So can I get into textile designing and try to figure that out? Yes. Comes graphic designing, you know. And so then I put myself in that position. And that's why when I went to high school, that's what I studied, you know, graphic designing, visual arts, which came with graphic designing, textile, and general knowledge in art. So yes, I design my own, you know, fabric and design my own costume and then give it to a friend to sew for me. And we use it for our performances. Yeah. And I'm actually currently in a process of setting up my own online textile, textile designing, shirt and stuff like that. So yes, the answer is yes.
Laurel makes clothes too.
Oh, she, really?
That's going out, but yeah,
oh, beautiful. She does her own beautiful also, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, I will take your email address from Megan, and you know, we could share some stuff together, because I would love to share some stuff with you.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be great. I hope you can hear me. My internet is not
now I can hear.
Oh, you can. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think that is so cool. And like, personally, you know, a lot of the music I perform doesn't have the same tradition that you're talking about in the history, but I do find that I perform better if I, like, make myself something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially that's for...
Yeah.
Because there was
one time at CalArts, and, you know, I was thinking, I was designing an iPhone charger holder in my head, and I was like, okay, let me go to the internet and see if I can get it. And I searched for it and I didn't find it. All the ones I found was not exactly what I wanted. So then I went to Home Depot and I bought some stuff, and you know, I started working on it at school. And one of my students came by, was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm making an iPhone charger. And then he turned around and looked at me, and he was like, you know, you can get that on Amazon, right? And wow. And I'm like, yes, I know that, but it's better when I make it. Yeah. You know, I feel better when I make it. So that's why I'm making it. I don't care how long it takes me to do it. You know, so yeah, that's one part for me. Like, I see it and I'm like, wow, I made that. Do you know, I made that. Whatever that person is wearing on stage, I designed. Like, it just gives me that joy to know that, you know, apart from my musical background, that I can do something else in attached to that to make the whole thing a full package, you know. So yeah, I enjoy doing it.
That's really cool. You know, one thing we haven't talked about yet is when you came to the States and what your first impressions of the States were, and you know, where you've lived in the United States so far.
Well, I always, when I get that question, I always talk, I always say it, even though I don't want to. But when I got picked at the airport at O'Hare, Chicago, by my ex-wife, we were driving for about an hour. And I was just sitting down, just like laid down like this. And I'm just chilling and just going like this. And she was driving for an hour and I never said anything. And then she turned to me and she's like, you've not said anything. And I'm like, yeah, you're expecting me to say something? And she's like, well, you're in America now. I mean, what do you think? I was hoping that you'll be surprised about things. And then I took another look around and I'm like, Actually, I thought America was going to be more beautiful than what I'm seeing right now. And no offense, but, you know, with everything I've seen on TV and movies and stuff like that, like, I was surprised that there was a lot of trash on the, on the side of the road at some places, especially in Chicago, you know, at some of the places. And, you know, like, there was just certain things that didn't click for me, like, I see in the movies and, you know, on TV and stuff like that. So then for like a week, actually, I questioned myself if I was really in the US. So, you know, I'll be looking when we get mails, I'll be looking on the mails to make sure that I see USA on the mail. Like, there were certain things I was trying to get to make sure that I'm really in the US, but, you know, but after a while, when I started like visiting other places and getting to know more about the country and other states and stuff like that, of course, there are a lot of things that I'm amazed of and still amazed of. You know, like, I've never been to California until I got this job. So, you know, like, when I got there, that was a big cultural shock for me in terms of what goes on there and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, there are stuff that I still think it's amazing. I mean, of course, there's a lot. That's why I'm still here after 11 years. I'm still here. So there are a lot that I'm learning personally as a cultural thing in the country, which is very great for me, for my work, and also as a person. So, yeah.
It's interesting when you travel, you know, because I've had that exact same experience. You have an image in your mind. You have a specific picture of what a country is supposed to look like.
Right.
And the one that comes to mind is Argentina. You know, we always see the mountains and the snow caps and like the extreme skiing and, you know, but when you go as a guest artist to visit somewhere, you're often in this one little area or in this one little school, and you stay very, very local to right there. Mm-hmm. So you go back and tell your friends, oh, yeah, I went to here or there. And they say, oh, did you see? And they start naming the big sites. And you're like, no, I was working. But the good thing, the better thing about that, I think, is you really do. I feel like I do know a lot more about those people and that at least that, you know, classical music in that setting around those people. Because I just stayed with this small group and I didn't go see a bunch of big sites where I'd likely just run into other tourists. So there's something really beautiful about that. And of course, also, I got to say, you know, when the opposite happens, like when I went to Portugal, I didn't really have a picture in mind as to what Portugal was. And then we saw a lot of cool things and it was such a pleasant surprise and just made a really, really big impact.
Yeah.
I love what you said about, you know, I asked you, what's the hardest thing about getting this music and this art across to these students who don't know it? And you said it was understanding that it's about more than the music and the dance. It's about the culture and the music and dance significance along with the culture and its meaning. Right. And something just struck me because when we talk to our students, I feel we're often trying to do the same thing. We're trying to get to what the music is about and why they're expressing it and why they should play it expressively. But it's so hard to get past the whole, okay, I'm just trying to do it right.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, and it's so hard to get by, you know, it's so hard to get past that.
Yeah.
I just find it's funny, like whenever I talk to an African music expert, like I'm always asking about the drumming. It's like, well, that doesn't really, like, early on this hour, like, it's like, that doesn't really exist. It's like the drumming and the dancing in the sense of,
exactly. Because and I'm trying so hard to change this, but it's so difficult and I'm going to keep trying. I'm not going to give up. But when you're talking about music and you just go and say music, like, there was, like, for example, when I go to a class and I'm like, okay, today we're, this is the music we're working on. Then someone would turn around and be like, oh, are we not going to dance then? And I'm like, that is part of the music, you know? So when I say music, I mean dancing, drumming, singing. That's what I mean. And they're like, oh, okay. So we're playing instrument and we're playing music and we're dancing too. And I'm like, yes, we're playing music and we're dancing too. But that's the thing in Ghana, you know, you don't separate those things. And that's why we don't say music meaning instrument, and then you have to also include dancing and singing. When you say music in Ghana, you mean everything. You know, it's just a combo. It just come like that. So drummers dance, dancers drum, singers drum and dance. It just goes that way. It's just everything all together, you know. And that's why the cultural aspect is very important, because you know, like when you get up in the morning, when people are cleaning compound and getting things ready for the day to start, they're singing, they're dancing, they're mimicking the drum calls and stuff like everything. Mostly in our daily life involves music throughout the whole day. So that is why for us it's more about the cultural and the understanding of how this thing is being presented than it is of the main instrument movement or the voice.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for percussionists who have spent all their life here, maybe studying percussion, learning how to use their hands or playing drum set and coordination that way, mm-hmm. but not. It's another thing to dance and to use your body as an instrument. And like right. The first dance class I'd ever taken
mm-hmm.
was a djangbe ever, you know?
Wow.
And that's just not, you know, I'm a musician
exactly.
in a different, you know, in
exactly.
a different context.
Yeah.
And so, but it's also been so cool to witness my students be so open to that mm-hmm. as well. You know, we've spent more time dancing than playing the drums in the past
yeah.
few weeks, and they're totally into it.
Yeah.
They're totally into it.
That's
we're
true.
Not a dance school. We're not in, you know, we're not in a dance school, and they have loved it, and it's helped them to understand
yeah.
the music
mm-hmm.
so much more.
Yeah.
I think that's really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
And something else, you know, Casey, you're highlighting some of the things that Nani had said, and another thing I think that goes with that too is that it's not about one person, that this music is such a community undertaking.
That's another thing.
And, you know, a quote from yourself that you
mm-hmm.
you said, I had the opportunity to interview Nani last June, I
yeah.
guess?
Yeah, yeah.
For Rhythm Scene. He was on the cover. And so I interviewed him for that. And one quote was, "You don't go on stage saying, I am going to shine. Instead, you go on stage saying, I'm going to contribute to us shining."
Yeah.
And it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about us, you know?
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think that also, in our context where we do have a lot of solo performances too, it's
yeah.
it's very helpful to remind us that, you know, that, you know, well, we do a lot of percussion ensemble too, right? So that it's kind of a similar lesson, but it's a very helpful reminder that it's not
right.
solo.
Right, right.
I just had a little something to add. I'm assuming everyone here has probably studied the Bach cello suites, and I actually got to take a class on the Bach cello suites in graduate school, and one thing I had never considered was the fact that, other than the preludes, the Bach cello suites are actually dance suites. All the movements are dances, and it was one of the most... I'm just an awkward, uncomfortable person, and it was one of the most awkward moments of my life to have to dance the minuet.
Yay!
But... having done it, I feel like I have a much more firm understanding of how the minuets and Bach cello suites should go. So, moral of the story, if you're studying the Bach cello suites, look up the dances, because they are dances.
Well, Laurel, didn't you used to teach some of these dances?
Yeah, like Baroque dance and Renaissance
specifically
dance.
Specifically some of these Baroque
oh, cool.
dances?
Yeah, especially to like a music apprise class. It's just something that gets them involved. And it's even better if it falls on Halloween, which I would play in. So then they're all in costume also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Laurel, you said you had done some African dance. What was your experience like that with that as a percussionist?
Oh, yeah, just a little bit. I it's not nearly as extensive as yours, Megan, but I remember specifically, like, I loved the dancing. Like, the drumming was fun, but it was also, like, the thing I was already studying. But what was so interesting to me was, yeah, to use just the body as a means of expression. And I think, like, a lot of my research and activities now, Nani, have to do with the body and understanding how it works and playing in a way that doesn't injure you and things like that. And I feel like, to some degree, you know, those dance workshops help to wake that up. Wake up a relationship between the mind and body, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like one of those was at Lawrence University.
It's Dane Richardson.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's the same. I've done the same one as well. Yeah.
Nice.
So you guys went there for a workshop, or what was it?
We were actually both there for the Zeltzman Marimba Festival.
Ah.
That's actually where we met. Mm. I charmed him with my African dance.
So I guess we've each done it twice, because at separate times we each attended as students independently as in years, and then we were both teaching, and that's where we met. So I've only got to do the workshop twice. But I have to say, when I was younger, so the first time around, which must have been like right after I finished my undergrad, I have to say it was really hard to let go. You know, it was really hard to just let go and just do this, just do these moves. Just it's okay. Don't worry about how silly I look or how poor a job I'm doing. But I do remember part of it was I almost felt like, oh man, am I insulting this tradition because I'm so bad at this? And so you have all this hesitation. Yeah. And it's like, well, here's this thing that is really meaningful and deserves a lot of respect and acknowledgement. And oh man, I feel so self-conscious, doing so poorly at it, you know, so it's hard to let that go and say like, well, look, you're learning and just do it, you know?
Yeah. I've had a lot of students like that. Like I've had a lot of students that come in that I see them and I know right away, you know, and like I will go to them and just stop them and tell them it's okay. Just let go. Just get out of that shell. It's all good. That's why I'm here. You know, if I will help you, we will get through it. We'll get to where you're supposed to be. Don't even think about it. Just do what I want you to do and you'll be fine. So, you know, that, yeah, there are a lot of a few that has that self-conscious thing when they're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Hey, I love the quick quotes on your website. And I guess if this were to lead into a question, it would be, you know, what made you choose these specific ones? So one is, when you dance, your purpose is not to get to a certain place on the stage. It's to enjoy each step along the way. I think that's great. And of course, we know what that means. But also, drum with pride, dance with passion, sing with joy. There's so much there, of course, and I can think of 100 different ways to word those great ideas. Can you tell us maybe how what made you decide those specific ones?
Well, for me, when I'm performing, I wouldn't say dancing or drumming, but when I'm performing, specifically dancing, but when I'm performing, that is the moment for me to express myself, to express my inner self, to bring my inner, whatever is happening inside me, that is the time that I bring it out. Either in a great way, if I'm doing a recreational piece, or in an intense way when I'm doing like a war or a fetish piece. So for me, it's a moment for me, like performance and, you know, even just teaching those things is a moment for me. And every time I have that opportunity, it's almost like a birthday or Christmas for me, where I'm opening a present or something like that. And that is why I have those quotes. So like, I'm not rushing. And that's why in our class, I'm like, don't rush. It's not about who gets there first. It's about how do you get there? You know? So for me, each of those steps before I get to completing my main movement or my main thing, each of those steps are like diamond. They're like moments that I need to enjoy, because you know what? They are not going to come again. Even when I repeat that movement again, it will not be the same atmosphere. Even if I do it right on the spot, no, it's still not the same. So each of those movements are like very important to me, and I need to connect with my ancestors. I put myself in the shoes of my ancestors. Why, how, what came into their mind for creating this thing? And so I take each of my steps and each of my notes and each of my words you know, very special, and I process them really nicely and make sure that I am coming out of my staff and audience are really connecting with me. Like, I don't do my performance without having audience connect with me. It has to happen. So, you know, that is why I have those quotes, because they are me. They are me.
On Nani's website, if you are interested in going to Ghana or learning more about what he does, there's a really nice section on the website, on his website, that answers questions about the study abroad trip and has more information about the program. So it's really well laid out. If you have questions about that, go to the study abroad trip on his tab on his website.
And super easy to find too, naniagbeli.com. So
yeah,
please check it out, everybody. Hey, thank you guys so much for episode 93 and Naniagbeli. Wow, really cool to meet you, and thank you so much for this just really great information.
Thank you guys so much. I'm very impressed. I mean, Megan told me about this and I'm like, yeah, whatever, but right now I see it and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm so lucky to be here. So you know, thanks to the four of you for, you know, making me the 93. I really appreciate that. I'll find a place to put that 93. You know, so thank you. You guys are doing a great job, and you know, congrats to doing this every week, and you know, more grease to your elbows.
Hey, thank you so much, Laurel, Ben, Megan. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
All right, bye, everybody.